services like this are very important, especially the ones you feel such a burden for. God give somebody such a warning tonight. And the best thing I can do is just encourage you to heed the warning. For your life will soon be gone. Oh, how sad to face the judgment, unprepared to meet thy God. Here in 2 Samuel 11, I've never preached this many times. I did at the church, and then I have a couple times. But it says here in verse number 1, it came to pass after the year was expired, at the time when kings go forth to battle, David sent Joab and his servants with him and all Israel, and they destroyed the children of Ammon and besieged Rabbah. But David tarried still at Jerusalem. Now, in that day, it was customary that certain times of the year is after the harvest. I mean, it's like having a football season or basketball or baseball season. I know this is comical, but after their harvest was brought in, the kings would go fight. They'd go, nations would go fight it out. They just done that certain times of the year. And at this time of the year, David was much like old Patton. He used to lead his troops into battle. But here, while they're supposed to be in battle, David is tarrying at Jerusalem when he ought to be on the battlefield. And everything that happens in this chapter, and all the disgrace, and all of the heartbreak, Bathsheba, her husband being killed by David, him trying to get him drunk before he went to battle, all the repercussions, all the loss of influence he had with his children, all that came out of that, Amnon raping Tamar, then Absalom killing Amnon, and then Absalom trying to overthrow the throne of David, disgracing him, taking his concubine, setting up a tent on the roof of in the capital of Jerusalem, and committing adultery with all the concubines of his own daddy to shame him, to reproach him. And he took men and tried to hunt David down like a dog to slaughter his own father and all of his family and all of the mighty men that followed David. And all these things that happened. And then Adonijah and all of that could have been prevented, no doubt, if David had been on the battlefield. Boy, you think about that. You think about what a snowball effect takes place when a man rejects God. Some of you here tonight say, by God's grace, you can think back if you'd been saved as a young person, the destruction you would not have caused. Think about it. Think about what you're trying to make up for now. Thank God you are. And by the grace of God, a lot of times we can. Think of all the lost ground, all the missed opportunities, all the time your children were growing up, never took them to church, never was an example, never could pray for them. Some of you here tonight, if you're a young person or in your 20s or 30s, your children are young, you better thank God that you've got an opportunity to set this thing right before you make an absolute total mess out of your life. Everybody don't have to end up in the ditch. Everybody don't have to end up in sin to find out God will save them. Everybody don't have to have their life destroyed and their marriage destroyed and their children destroyed, lives destroyed to find out it don't pay to sin. You can avoid all of that if you'll obey God. That's why Solomon wrote, "Remember thy Creator in the days of thy youth." And what an awesome responsibility that it is. But only God knows, see. Only God knows what the future holds. Only God knows what's going to happen 6 months from now. Only God knows what will be set into motion by our obedience or disobedience to God in a service like this. I'm going to tell you something, friend. There was a preacher told me years ago, and I have come to believe absolutely that he is exactly right. God condemns a man many times for his sin, but that real call of God don't come many times in your life. You think about that for a minute. There's many times I was growing up, I felt the power of God and was under conviction. That day God saved me, it was different than any time God had ever called me. He gave me the grace and the faith and repentance and the gift of life. Boy, what a special thing that is. And when God so rolls out the red carpet, and God will take a service like this, and God will direct a message to an individual because He loves them so much, and that to be the very catalyst to bring them to God. That is absolute love, grace, and mercy. You think about folks here tonight, and we're going to pray in a minute. Think about folks in this building tonight. Many, many profess to be saved. I'd say probably 90% of folks in here, maybe more, profess to be saved. What am I doing preaching a sermon to a lost man? You got all these Christians need to be exhorted. You got a whole lot more folks say they're saved, need to be encouraged to pray. Why do we take special time to deal with one or two or three or four people? It ain't us. It's the Lord. He's the one that orchestrates a service. He's the one that lays on a pastor's heart how that thing's to be carried out. And then when you preach the revival, He lays it on a man's heart. And if he's obedient, it's always for somebody. No accident. Services like this are for children of God that are just about to mess up. Just about to marry the wrong person. Just about to go down the wrong road. Got to experience that far country. Got to experience and have a taste of sin before this thing's over. I'll tell you something. It ain't nothing that the devil's got but rotten apples. And they all got worms in them. And they'll all make you sick. And they ain't worth it. You need to realize that tonight. But I'll talk to you a little bit on marching towards Waterloo. 1821, the great Emperor Napoleon Bonaparte dies 51 years old on the island of St. Helena. It has been said that many times as he was exiled there, after the humiliating, abject humiliation of the Battle of Waterloo, put there by the Europeans, chased out of his own country, that many times he would take the map of Europe and he would sit agonizingly staring at what the map of Europe looked like. And he'd put his finger on one spot, and that spot would be Waterloo. And Napoleon go over and over again. If it wasn't for that one spot, I would have been emperor over all of Europe. But in studying the history of Napoleon, in studying the history of King David, in studying the history of most men, there's never one time in their life that brings about their demise. It is a process of disobeying God. It is a process of rejecting God. Far from the truth, Napoleon was defeated a long time before he ever got to Waterloo. And the man that runs his life and runs his home, that very day that it happens, when it comes to a culmination, when it comes to a head, that's not when it happened. It happened time after time and day after day and month after month and year after year of not doing what we know that we ought to do. And when you think of Napoleon Bonaparte, you think of a Wellington. You think of England. You think of Austria. You think of Prussia. You think of the Russians and that great battle that took place right outside of Belgium, Brussels, and began to be the place where more people died, more battles took place at that place in Europe than any other piece of real estate in all of Europe. That place Napoleon went down, that place that Napoleon shamed his nation and slaughtered his people as he had done on many occasions. I think about what this word has come to symbolize. It's not just Napoleon's life. You think about anybody. What do we say when someone has a great demise? We say they met their Waterloo. This word, this place, this battle has had such an impact on Europe and the world that phrase has become to be the phrase that's coined to describe one's downfall. For example, we speak of the Soviet Union. What was their Waterloo? It was Afghanistan. What was Mussolini's Waterloo? It was Northern Africa. What was Hitler's Waterloo? It was Russia. And on and on and on I could go. But this term has come to symbolize a man's downfall. What was David's Waterloo? Well, it was when he looked at Bathsheba and followed his own lust. But it began when he got off the battlefield. It began when he quit praying. It began when he thought he was something special and he got to sin. And God had let him get by. And he is somebody special. And he got to have the forbidden fruit that God said that a man couldn't have. What's that? That's pride. What's that? That's the blindness of the lust of the flesh that can get in a man's heart. But think about all that happens in different people's lives as they hit rock bottom. You've seen this. I've seen this. People paralyzed. People killed in car wrecks. Awful things happen to their life. And they say, if it wasn't for that one spot, if it wasn't for that curb, if that tire hadn't blown out, if it wasn't for that liquor store, if it wasn't for that beer store, if it wasn't for that friend I was riding with, but oh, that ain't the Waterloo where that downward road started and that march toward destruction. It started the first time that a man said no to God and said no to the warnings of the Word of God. And that old time preacher stood up and warned of the evil of alcohol and the evil of drugs and the evil of the sin of this world. And we harden our heart and stiffen our neck and walk out the door and keep on sinning and think that nothing's going to happen and God's forgot about it. But that march starts toward that destruction that will ultimately take our life and many times take our soul. That's why a service like this is so critical. That God has stopped somebody on that march to destruction and that march to Waterloo. You'd find that place of repentance. Follow that white flag of surrender and say, God, I'm tired of rebelling. I'm tired of sin. I'm tired of the blindness of my own heart. Oh, God, have mercy and give me grace and mercy while I can receive it and have it. Oh, I think about old Napoleon, one of the proudest men that ever lived. When evil happens in a man's life and he's not immediately judged, he gets proud. Oh, he thinks he's invincible. Every 18-year-old boy in a sports car thinks he can't die because I used to be one. And it's just the mercy of God I'm standing here today. What does that? Pride does that. In 1797, old Napoleon began his rise to power. A man full of lust to have control over others took 37,000 men and won a battle at 26 years old in Italy. And it was so impressive because he was so outnumbered that he gained the very accolades of the people of France. And then he invaded Austria and 1,000 years of Venetian independence was taken over by Napoleon Bonaparte. He began to be called the Little Corporal, not because of his stature, but because his armies were so outnumbered, and he beat armies 2 and 3 times larger than he was. But the more he won, the more he had to have, and the more lust for power that he had to have. And when a man gets like that, he does foolish things and ignorant things and does not count the cost nor the consequence. That's how we get in the mess we get into, because sin will blind you. Sin will bind you. And sin will grind you. And the longer you sin, the more you think you can get by with it. And when that day comes of the Waterloo, what an astounding, shocking experience it is to find out God still remembers. Oh, Louis XVI run out of France. A coup's taking place.
Napoleon takes it upon himself to proclaim himself emperor of all of France, December the 2nd, 1804. At the age of 22, Napoleon's unknown. 4 years later, he's the greatest general that France has had in hundreds of years. 2 years later, he's the ruler of France. 6 years after that, he's the biggest of the ruler of the biggest empire that's ever been in Europe since Rome. His empire went from Moscow all the way unto Egypt, but it never was enough. It's like the millionaire laying on his deathbed, and they said, "Sir, what do you want more than anything in the world?" When he's about to die, and he said, "Another million. Let me tell you, the things of this world will not satisfy you. It'll leave you empty. Oh, it'll leave you high and dry. But thank God, one drink of God's salvation can settle that hunger and that thirst and give you a reason to live and a purpose to live." Oh, and I think about this man. I think about a man that destroyed his own self. See, he was a very brilliant man. But a lot of times, a man that's brilliant can play the fool. He was such an outstanding military strategist because he was the first one to standardize all the calibers of his rifles, and they could mass produce his ammunition. And then he lightened the load of his troops. He made their cannons lighter, made their guns lighter. They were the most mobile army in all the world. While everybody else is dragged down by the process of getting to battle. Oh, Napoleon had the speed, lightning speed, for that day to approach the enemy. By 1804, his army had swept over Europe. By 1807, only Britain and Russia were resisted his advances. Oh, his eye has on the prize. Hey, at the Battle of Friedland, he defeats the Russians and forces, oh, Alexander the Tsar of Russia into a peace pact that he will not trade with Britain. That's the prize. To defeat England, to take Britain. He's possessed with that. Hey, let me tell you, I didn't mention this last night, but when God chose Isaac and then God blessed Ishmael, it was never enough. They wanted it all. The Arabs want it all. They're not content with what God gave them. They want what that Jew's got. They want what God promised them. And a man better learn at an early age that he's satisfied with the lot that God gave him in this world. He's on the road for the domination of Europe. His first step toward Waterloo started when he invaded Spain, 1808. And then conquered Portugal in 1807. 300,000 men is what it took to invade Spain and hold that country from 1808 to 1814. Some of his greatest men he lost trying to keep that place where he was bogged down in a quagmire. Then the next step to Waterloo came when he lost the invasion of Russia, June the 24th, 1812. This is absolutely the greatest military blunder I've ever read about until 130 years later, that Adolf Hitler did the same thing, thinking he could conquer Russia, and it became his Waterloo in World War II. All that men would find God and be satisfied in Jesus instead of running after this world and the trinkets of this world that won't satisfy even if they get them. I don't care what you're chasing, you get it. It ain't going to be what you think it is. It never is. Well, what happened was this previous alliance with Russia. Now, you stay with me. I'm headed somewhere with this. This previous alliance with Russia, where Alexander the Tsar had made a peace agreement that he wouldn't trade with Russia, or with England, rather, Britain. That was good for a while. But it bankrupted the nation of Russia. And they had no choice but to deal and to trade with England. When Napoleon heard that, his pride's wounded. Boy, listen, you don't wound a man like that's ego without paying a price. And Napoleon is determined to bring Russia back into the fold and put the pressure upon them and then invade England. That's his whole idea. But Russia is so vast and it's so horrendously cold and the geography, it's so impossible that never has that country ever been taken over. And Hitler, in his pride, and Napoleon, in his pride, thought they could march through that frozen tundra in 6 weeks out of 2 or 3 months and take that country. What a blunder they made. What done that? Pride done that. What causes a man to say no to the Holy Ghost? It's pride. He says, I'll have another chance. I'll do it next Sunday. I'll do it next month. I'll do it next year. God will let me live. Me and God's got our own thing going. Me and Jesus has got it all worked out. He'll not let me go to hell. What does that? Pride does that. But when a man humbles himself down, he realizes the great privilege and honor that it is that God would call him to be saved by his marvelous grace. Poland's advisors warned him not to go. Proud men don't listen to reason. And you know what? You get full of pride, you won't listen to a preacher either. Right. Oh, we get to where we think we know more than daddy does. Tell you something, my daddy, I've been to California and I've never been. I might be just a little bit smart to listen to him. My dad's been down the road of life a lot more than I have. He might not be such an idiot and a fool. He might know what he's talking about. I'll tell you words of wisdom my daddy gave me. I found to be true all my life. Them that's easy to get are hard to keep. What are you talking about? I'm talking about a woman or a man. Right. Boy, there's old sayings like that that'll keep you out of the ditch. Keep you out of trouble if you listen to the wisdom of these old saints of God. But Napoleon thought he was lucky. He said, he made this statement, that destiny has never resisted my will. Oh, how sad that is to think you got some corner on this thing. Oh, I'm special. Oh, I'm somebody. And I'm not like other folks. And it's going to turn out all right when God said it'll not turn out right unless we've been made right by the blood of Christ. Listen, June 24th, 1812, Napoleon launches this invasion. He expects a quick battle. Makes the same foolish blunder. It's bad enough he does this, but that crazy demon-possessed Adolf Hitler should have learned from history. But the only thing men learn from history is that they never learn from history. And they go to Russia in summer clothing and don't prepare for the cold weather that's coming. What a miscalculation. I'll tell you what, sometimes God, just like Pharaoh four times hardened his heart against God. God said, you'll not let me get glory voluntarily. I'm going to harden your heart the next time, but I'll get glory in your damnation and your destruction. If I'll not give God glory in my life, he can take me out of here and use my death to terrify 4 or 5 and be an example and get them to God. But God shall get glory out of every man's life, whether it's voluntarily or whether God has to take it. Pride makes a man stupid.
Amen. Right. Exactly right.
Well, that's right. Sin makes you stupid. Because you know what that Bible says. And you know God don't lie. And you know they ain't no getting by. Then why do we do it? It makes us stupid. OD'ing on stupid pills. I've done it many a time. What does that? following the flesh, following the wisdom of the flesh and the pride of the flesh. They crossed the border. They're waiting for Alexander and the Russians to come after them. But Alexander is not playing into his trap. He's going to play his own game, and he's going to show old Napoleon how to win a war. He divides his men into two groups as Napoleon keeps marching forward on and on, day after day. Oh, Alexander, how they start retreating day after day. What they doing? They're going to suck them in to that frozen tundra. They're going to wait till wintertime gets there and let the weather do, let God do what the Russian army can't do. And that's exactly what's about to happen. After 4 weeks, swift Napoleon's gone 200 miles into Russia. Now, that's a big feat back then. Napoleon, he can't figure out where they are. But then he notices something. Watch this now. The reason that Napoleon was so mobile was because they didn't carry a bunch of supplies with them. They go in like the Redcoats did in America in the Revolutionary War. They'd just go in and take somebody's house and kick them out. Steal their crops. Steal their food. Y'all not know the Redcoats done that? Aren't you glad we won? Praise God. Hey, some things I like bragging about, and that's one of them. Bunch of turkey rabbit hunters whooping the greatest army in the world at that time. Why? Because God was on our side, that's why. But oh, Alexander knew how the tactics of Napoleon, how that he would go village by village and plunder and loot and take and steal to feed his men. So what did he do? You ever heard of a scorched earth policy? He burnt that country to the ground. And as they retreated, and the police moving forward, they burnt the houses. They burnt the crops. They burnt the land. In other words, he said, if we can't have it, you ain't having it. But it was a smart move on the part of Alexander. These men, these Frenchmen, don't have winter clothing. They don't have shelter. They're burning every building down. They're burning the crops up. After 7 weeks of exhaustion, oh, Napoleon's men get dysentery. And I know it's sickening to think about it, but they said following Napoleon's army was like following a sewer because of the dysentery and the trail of diarrhea, to put it where you can understand it, all down the road. And Napoleon lost 100,000 men when not one shot was fired. I believe if I was Napoleon, I'd turn back to France. I believe if I was Napoleon, I'd lick my wounds and get back to the house. But pride won't let him do it. Hey, is that not just like us? Bad things happen to us, and God warns us and says, if I was you, I'd get right with God. Holy Ghost says, if I was you, I'd get tired of suffering. But our pride won't let us, and we keep on going down that road of destruction, mile after mile after mile. I've seen men lose their families, lose their jobs, lose everything they got. And they keep on, they get worse and worse and worse. You've seen the same thing. The Russian army finally is joined at Smolensk, and they prepare to fight Napoleon. Napoleon's men are weakened through all this disease and dysentery. And as they join forces, some of Napoleon's men are having to be used to support the supply lines where the Cossacks are, wiping them out like sharpshooters and killing them. Napoleon's army is already reduced in a couple months from 600,000 to 156,000 fighting men. Now let that sink in. What man that's got any sense that wouldn't say, hey, I believe I miscalculated this thing. I believe I better turn back. I'll tell you a story. First church I ever pastored, there's a little boy that come to church, and he was like 8 years old. Never been around God. Never been around the things of God. But his mom and daddy drunk all the time. They're fussing and fighting, and they're about to break up. That little boy comes to church one Sunday night, comes to the altar. And I said, son, What do you need? He said, I want my mom and daddy to get saved. Boy, he's a crying. 2 weeks after that, an old man didn't see him. Wasn't his fault. Drug him down the streets of Granite Falls, and that boy laid in a coma for years before he died. Now listen to me. Before that happened, I went to see that mom and daddy. His mama come downstairs. I mean, I'm in their house. I'm not going to jump on them. I respect a man's house. She comes downstairs and she ain't dressed right, and she thinks I'm going to jump all over. Well, I ain't there to do that. You got to catch a fish before you clean them. And I don't know why she said this. I'll never forget it as long as I live. I'm not giving up my shorts and my beer for nobody. God, when she said that, I felt hell come out of her. And it wasn't a week after that that boy was there. And then they began to have, listen, husband goes to Myrtle Beach. He gets a bunch of boys attack him, and they leave him for dead in a dumpster, rob him of a couple $1,000. Car wrecks, almost get killed. And finally, that boy's daddy finally got saved. And he told God, he said publicly, if I ever go back to drugs, kill me. 6 months later, one time, he went back to drugs and they buried him. But to this day, and I've not seen that boy's mama in 20 years, but to this day, I have no clue and no assurance she's still running wild in spite of all that's happened. Her other boy in prison for killing a man for years, probably alive. What am I saying? It seems like no matter what happens to some people, they will not turn back, no matter what. What sad thing. Warning after warning. Russia's got 100,000 men. Napoleon, 156,000. The Battle at Smolensk takes place, and it's blazing thunder for 3 days. Terrified, the Russians retreat eastwardly. And again, whole villages and food supplies are burned to the ground. Their plans were to starve the French out. Napoleon gets more frustrated as time goes on, and he can't get that elusive prize of Alexander coming and surrendering to him. But his pride will not let him stop. He's 2 weeks away from Moscow, the capital, and he's intent on getting there. Surely if Moscow's captured, Alexander will come running and sue for peace and beg for peace and let Napoleon save his face. But born a gambler, Napoleon will not listen to the warnings of God. Finally, his men beg and plead. And they get him not to march to St. Petersburg, for that would have been the annihilation of all of them. So they go to Moscow. Finally, the Russians put up a fight there from the heights of Borodino in 1812, a spot outside of Moscow. The battlefield is filled with blood. The generals are in place. The French have 137,000 now. The Russians have picked up a few troops, have 120,000. 6 a.m. sharp, 500 rifles began to blaze down on those Russians. And in the Polish surprise, they fire back. And day or hour after hour after hour, guns are blazing and muskets are being shot at. Men are bleeding and men are dying. And one of the Russian generals wrote, body and debris conspired to make the fields of Borodino a vision of hell. Well, Napoleon said it's the biggest mistake he ever made in his life. But did he turn back? No. Over 30,000 more French soldiers die. 35,000 horses die. Napoleon holds the battlefield. But the victory is not worth the cost. Moscow is now undefended. They marched 75 miles from the fields of Borodino to Moscow. His army has been reduced from 600,000 to 100,000. The terrified citizens of Moscow flee the city. And it's like a ghost town as Napoleon marches in. Now listen to me. We can't understand this. was when they finally got there September 14th, 1812. There were no crowds to greet them. Nobody to give them the key to the city. There's no crowds applauding, standing on both sides of the road. And Helen are crying, "Hail to the chief! Hail to the king!" There's no glory in what's happening. Oh, Napoleon's frustrated. And all that he's went through, lost 500,000 men for absolutely nothing. But instead of turning back, his pride won't let him do it. Still no word from Alexander. He goes in, takes the Kremlin. That's where the Russian czars live. In those palaces there, you've seen pictures of them. He settles down to wait for a reply from Alexander that he can save face when he goes back to France. You stay with me. I'm still going somewhere with this. That night, Napoleon finally has a bed to lay on. And for all these weeks of being out in the open field, that night he finally gets to lay down and sleep. But there is no rest for the wicked, said my God, and no peace. In the middle of that night, Napoleon is woken, awakening. And they tell Napoleon, they set the city on fire. And to his great surprise, he said, "Oh God, surely they won't burn down their own capital city." See, he bit more off than he could chew. He didn't know who he was messing with. You know what those Russians did when they fled Moscow? They opened all the prisons and they armed the prisoners with gunpowder and fuses. And those criminals went all over Moscow and burned that place to the ground. Now where's the glory? Now where's the trophy? You're giving your life for it. Oh, how sad that is for man to chase a dream that'll never come true. And to chase that'll never fulfill him in this world. Boy, I think about all that transpires. Alexander, boys, his army, what's left of them? Man, they're like a bear that's been robbed of their cubs. Alexander knew the cruel Russian weather was on the way. Oh, Napoleon waits 6 weeks on Alexander to come, and he never does. His lines of communication are being demolished by the Cossacks that are picking them off one by one. The advisors of Napoleon say, "We better get out of Dodge." Of course, they didn't say Dodge. They said Moscow. "Well, we better get back to Paris." October the 15th, the first snow falls in Moscow. After 5 short weeks of occupation with wagons piled high of loot and supplies, Napoleon and his men began to leave. All they've got now, no glory, no honor, no way to save face. All they've got is some wagons that they filled full of loot and supplies, and they're heading back to Paris, and the snows are coming and the winter's coming. So Napoleon, of course, he's a man of strategy. He goes southwest to where it's warmer. Alexander's no fool. He cuts him off and forces him back to Borodino. And they walk back to that battlefield where tens of thousands of unburied men are all over the face of that ground. What a sad day when you got to go back and see what your sin has cost you and others. I wonder what Anna Nicole Smith is thinking tonight as she's about to bury her boy that grew up seeing her naked all the time, her leading him to hell. Her leading him to drug abuse, alcohol abuse. She's a-blaming everybody else. When she walks by that casket, that boy's soul's gone. He's in heaven or in hell. I wonder if even then she'll look in the mirror and say, "My God, forgive me for what I've done." Her pride will never let her do it. So they walk back and see all this destruction. Now they're lashed by the driving sleet. As they walk by the war-torn fields, Borodino, no shelter from the cruel elements. Their meager supplies are running out. Terrible hunger has set in on their men. They're about to starve to death. The snow comes. The French soldiers don't have warm clothes. They don't have boots. totally unprepared for the harsh winter. Listen, friend, I don't preach this because I ain't mad at nobody. There's coming a day. If you're not saved, you're not going to be prepared for it. Boy, there's coming a day when your health's going to leave you. When your youngins are going to be in the hospital. When you're going to need to be able to get a hold of God. Boy, there's coming a day when you chase sin. You ain't going to be prepared for it. Oh, that somebody tonight would heed the warning and be prepared when that day comes. 30 degrees and the men begin to freeze. Alexander's chances come for revenge. The Russian winter's blocking Napoleon's way home, and the road is solid ice. More than 1,500 miles from Paris, as that little French army stumbles westward on the endless waste of snow and blizzards, seeing the folly of their actions. They took their big guns that Napoleon is so proud of. And it meant nothing to him then. And they took them apart so the French couldn't use them and left them beside the road. All of that loot they put on wagons. Every bit of it. They don't have horses to pull them now. They don't, listen, it all seemed like nothing now as they throw all that loot in the ditch and leave it there for the elements to destroy. You know why? On the Titanic, when it was sinking, that there was hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of gold and stuff left. One man left $300,000. Left his wife's jewelry worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. Brother Mikey left every bit of that to get on a lifeboat. And he picked up an orange instead. He said, when I looked death in the face, he said, all those riches seem to mock me. And instead of picking up those valuables, I picked up something that could help me in the hour of death, something to eat. That's what I'm talking about. Oh, when you get to the end of this life and you destroyed it all, you'd give everything you've got for one more day of good health and a call from God. Here it is. It's all gone. The army drags itself. Few surviving horses are eaten by the surviving soldiers. 600,000 proud, brave men are reduced now to 49,500 men. They become cannibals. They begin eating the flesh of their dead comrades. And the old horses that are the few that's still alive, as they walk through that frozen tundra, they take their knife, cut off some of the flesh of that old horse. And those horses were so numb, they didn't even know that they'd done it. Hey, that's what I'm talking about. Oh, I tell you, when you come down to the end, you'll find out what's really counts and what's important in this world. The Russian army's descending on them like the jaws of a bear trap. They got them cornered at the Berezina River. Boy, Alexander said, I'll finish them off. There's one bridge. Cross that river, 300 yards wide of that cold Russian Berezina River. Only way back to Paris is over that bridge. Old Alexander goes down and blows the bridge up where they can't cross. Old Napoleon comes to the edge of that water and realizes what's happened. He begins to burn all of his papers knowing he's about to be captured. Then in the last minute, he said, I've always been lucky, I'm going to try it one more time. And he sent his men a diversion, some of his men down the river to act like he was retreating that direction. And Alexander sent his men to meet them. While they were doing that, 400 army engineers tore down every house around that bridge, around where that bridge was. And in 2 days, they built that bridge back in that frozen Russian water. And it cost Napoleon, the men that built that bridge, freezing in that water, and those that died trying to cross it. When the Russians came back to get them, he lost 25,000 more men to save his own hide. I'll tell you something, friend. There is death, every man for himself. That's right. Your buddies don't care about you. That's right. You run out of money and see how often they come around. Get saved and see if you ever see them again. Boy, here's what happens. The bridge collapse has to be rebuilt 2 times. 25,000 men survive. Napoleon hears the word that coup's taking place in Paris. Him and a few of his men go off on now a 900-mile journey, fast as they can go. 575,000 to 600,000 men. Well, started out with 600,000. Now he's lost 575,000 men for nothing. God, how sad. Here he's going back to Paris. What he's going to do? He was an expert at the press. He owned all the newspapers, just like the liberals do in this country, and spew out their propaganda every day. And Napoleon spewed out his lies, had to get back to Paris to cover his backside and to lie and spew out his propaganda before the truth would be known. 4 months later, the beleaguered 25,000 men come back. France paid a dear price. They were reduced to where never again have they been a world power. Now they're a bunch of pacifists, and now they're a bunch of nothing and nobodies. Why is that? One man thought he could have it all, wasn't satisfied with what God gave him, and it cost him everything. He is so hated by the French people when he gets back. He's taken and he's exiled on an island at the other end of France. But then in a couple years, he comes back to power. Unbelievable resurrection of charisma. He comes back this time, gathers together another army to defeat the Europeans. Can you even comprehend that? You just killed 575,000 of your men, not even counting all you've slaughtered in Spain and everywhere else. The French people lost 1 million of their best men under Napoleon. Are you listening? Because of his demonic dream, like the Antichrist of ruling the world. Finally, he goes and he assembles an army, and he meets this time. The Europeans will not be fooled again. And they meet him. Wellington meets him there at the Battle of Waterloo, right outside of Brussels, Belgium. And there the battle takes place. And the old guard that had never lost a battle for Napoleon was his last ace in the hole. And that day, he marched those men down the road, down a hill. And when they got to the bottom of that hill, Wellington had his sharpshooters, and they picked them off like rabbits in an open field. And old Napoleon had to go back to France totally humiliated because of his ungodly pride. This time the Europeans will make sure he never does this caper again. And Napoleon is taken to St. Helena Island, 1,200 miles off the African coast, and that's where he will die. And if you go to Russia today, on the western border of the nation of Russia, you walk down the road, and there's a granite slab sticking out of the ground. And it said, in 1812, Napoleon passed by here with over 400,000 men. When you go to the other side and you're looking back east, it says in 1812, Napoleon passed by here with 25,000 men. You know what that tells me? That tells me the danger of sin and rejecting God. Now, why did you read about David? I'm going to give you this and I'm done. David did the same thing. That road to Waterloo for King David happened by his delinquency. It happened, hey, I'll tell you something, long before he saw the naked body of Bathsheba, his heart was already departed from God. He saw her and had to have her. No matter what the cost, no matter what it would cost him, he wants his sin and he's going to have it. His slackness came to pass in the eventide. David arose off his bed. He's laying around instead of fighting the battle. The immodesty in this story. Here David sees a woman taking a bath on her rooftop. Why did she, from his rooftop he sees her. What's she doing taking a bath when those houses are on elevated hills? Anybody up here can see what's going on down there. The devil set him up and he fell for it. Bathsheba's as guilty as he is. What's she doing out there in front of God and everybody else? Her clothes off. I'll tell you why. She knew he was up there on that roof. That's why. Immodesty. I tell you, when a woman starts dressing immodest, she may not be in the clutches of sin yet, but she's headed there. Bible says a whorish woman's house is the road to hell. David's vision, he saw a woman washing herself, and the woman was beautiful to look upon. Old Job said, I made a covenant with mine eyes. I would not think or lust upon a maid. A man's eyes will control his heart. David's thoughts, he sent and inquired after the woman. He looked, he lusted, he longed. His disrespect. He finds out Bathsheba is the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite. And David sent messengers and took her. In spite of the fact she is married, in spite of the fact who her husband was, in spite of the fact who her daddy was, lust has no conscience. Are you listening? David sent messengers and took her, and she came in unto him. She came voluntarily. Disloyalty. Is not this Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite? 2 Samuel 23, 34 and 39 tells us that Bathsheba's husband and her daddy, they're two of the mighty men in the heroes of faith of David's army. How could David do such a thing? Listen to me now. These men, here's the sweet psalmist of Israel. Here's a man after God's own heart. Here's men, Brother Mike, laying their life down for David, life down for the nation. How can David do such a thing? You're not beyond that. I'm not beyond that. That's the power of sin. That prodigal trip to the far country began before he ever left home. Oh, yeah. That far country got in his heart before he ever got to the far country. I was thinking last week, driving through Burnsville, North Carolina. And then about 2 months ago, I was up in western part of New York. Just country folks like you are. And I got to thinking, Brother Mike, how in a few places back in these hills, there's still a culture that you can recognize how America might have been years ago. But through the internet, satellite television, all this stuff being pumped in, we're absolutely being destroyed. Perverts living down the road, up the road, everywhere. Men drunk on lust, molesting their own children, their own grandchildren, and raping people left in. What's happening? I tell you, there's been a demise in this country. Why is that? Because we started down that road after World War II. We're going to be rich. It don't matter. We're going to work on Sunday, every Sunday. Whether or not we got to disobey God, we'll work two or three jobs, but we'll be rich and have more than our daddies did. And we've been sowing to the wind and reaping the whirlwind. You say, well, I don't like that. Well, I don't either. I don't like a bit of this. I don't like preaching of this. I hate the fact that y'all need it so bad, and I do too. Think about that old boy. I grew up with him. Some of you grew up with him. And there, some of them's in mental institutes. Some of them, an old boy I grew up with, I never run around with him much. His mama just a harlot, daddy a drunk. He so burned his mind out on drugs that when he's 25 years old, Brother Mike, if you go see him, he'd run around his house with a pistol on his side like playing cowboys and Indians trying to kill people, thinking he's in the army or something, just his mind gone. And he went on a trip and he ain't never coming back. Why? That didn't happen overnight. He was following the footsteps of mom and daddy, and the judgment fell on him. I think tonight we can look back at our life and we can look at things that happened to us. Man, if that one day I lost my mind, why did I do that? And man, the chills run up your back of embarrassment when you even think about it. You can't stand the thought of that one day or that one night you slipped up, messed up. That wasn't that one night. That was weeks and months and years of saying no to God. That's how we get there. Tonight's night, Brother Mike, somebody can sure get a lot of mercy. I'll tell you something. I don't know a whole lot, but I know when God puts something on me like this, somebody's in big trouble. It may be one of the best Christians in this church. And you're looking over the fence and you think the grass is greener. It's got to be mowed on both sides. It ain't greener. happiest you'll ever be in your life is living for Jesus. And you throw all that away. And you can throw all that away in a short period of time and spend the rest of your life. Oh, God, Brother Mike, God forgives us. But people don't forget, do they? And I tell you something else. The devil won't let you either. He'll gnaw at you and gnaw at you night and day and won't let up. Boy, it pays to serve him. If you're here tonight and you're lost and undone without God, what's it going to take to get you slowed down? I know what it can take. You say, well, I'll tell you one thing. I hope I don't go to hell. Well, I'll tell you one thing, too. Anything's better than going to hell. I'd hate for God to have to paralyze me from my neck down, get my attention. Oh, God wouldn't do stuff like that. You better read this 66 books and this black back 66. You'll find out He does. Oh, yes. Oh, it's so much easier to come while God's a-dealing. That's right, Brother Mike, the easy way. Just obey God and say, God, I might be hard-headed, but I ain't that hard. I don't need you to take a sledgehammer to me. Just speak to me, and I'll listen. That's the easy way. Sin ain't worth it. I'm going to tell you something. Child of God, it ain't worth it. That chastening hand of God ain't worth it. It ain't worth you. Your youngest in your face cussing you out, calling you a hypocrite. It ain't worth it. Amen. It ain't worth it to lose it all for what? Come up to the end of life. You know what? There's people all over this country would give anything, Brother Wesley, in 10 million worlds if they could get back to that little wife and them little young'uns around the Christmas tree.
That's right.
And everybody loving each other.
Yeah.
Oh, if it wasn't for that sin, if it wasn't for my pride, if it wasn't for my, if I just listened to God, that revival night.
Right.
Look at all the problems I wouldn't be dragged through today. Stand on their feet, their heads are bowed, their eyes are closed.